This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. I hope you know about us already. We've been here for quite some time, Saturdays at this point, talking about the disease of addiction and the many paths to recovery. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, and we'll have more about them straight ahead. But today we're going to take a particular look at one group that I think it's fair to say, of all the groups that have been affected or can be affected by the disease of addiction, may have a greater likelihood of slipping into this disease, and certainly face unique, if not even more difficult, circumstances achieving sobriety and then maintaining sobriety. I'm talking about young adults, or more specifically, college-age students and kids in colleges. You know the scenario, first time away from home, no parents around, lots of freedom, lots of experimentation. It's a fraught error for a lot of young people. But fortunately, there are educators and the schools in our area, and certainly all over the country, that have stepped out in front of this problem, recognized it, and are doing some terrific work to help students, first of all, identify if they have a problem, and then manage sobriety, you know, without the expense of their college life. To that end, we welcome Katie Bean to the program today. Katie is with St. Joe's University. She is Assistant Director, Student Outreach and Support for a program called WADE, the WADE program at St. Joe's, Wellness, Alcohol, and Drug Education. We welcome Katie Bean to the program. Katie, how are you? Thanks for joining
Hi.
Us.
And thank you so much for having me.
Is it true that the hawk will never die?
The hawk will never, ever die.
Thanks so much. Tell us about you, first of all. What's your background?
Sure. So I'm from the area, originally from Norristown. I live in Phoenixville now. And, you know, I started getting into the work of education. I'm from a family of educators, but really focused on the topics having to do with wellness, alcohol, and drugs, just because my own, you know, family has dealt with these issues like many, many families. And so that was always, you know, personal interest, and through my education, through my master's program, wanting to work on a college campus specifically, knowing that that population is really struggling with wellness, alcohol, and drug issues, maybe more so than other populations. Mm-hmm. And through my work, you know, I years ago met my husband, who's in recovery, and this has become more and more of a personal as well as professional topic for me.
Well, it's certainly no longer... unique for people to have this disease in their family or know somebody who has. Can I ask you the impolite question of your age?
Sure. I'm mid-30s.
Okay. I ask you that because you're working with young people. And I think
yes.
I think that the age differential there may matter, but you'll tell me about that straight ahead. So so tell me what WADE is all about.
Sure. So our program really advocates for healthy lifestyles for our students. And we do that in a lot of ways through collaboration with different campus or community organizations. We do outreach with different awareness programs or different events on campus. We support our students and try to educate and empower them to make good, positive, informed decisions, to make decisions not only now in college that could impact them in their future, but also, you know, we're creating adults and engaged citizens, hopefully. And so, you know, we really try to provide the resources, referrals as needed, and give our young people enough information that they can make positive, healthy choices.
Well, you know, without getting into a lot of detail here, can you give me an idea of sort of the overall position that mm-hmm. a private school like St. Joe's would have regarding drugs and alcohol? I mean, obviously, there's prohibitions in place, but what are some of the things that an incoming student would just in general find out about regarding particularly alcohol?
Sure. So we utilize a harm reduction approach, particularly with alcohol. We know that alcohol at some point will be legal for students to consume, even if they're underage, you know, now. And so we want them to be educated and understand the impact that alcohol can have on their body, on their life, on their relationships, on their future. And so we talk about that in lots of different ways with our students to try to get them to think critically about the decisions they make and the impact of those decisions. Because we know people, you know, they're individuals. They're going to make choices, and then they have to be responsible for those choices that they do make. And so when it comes to alcohol, underage drinking, it's out there, obviously. And so, you know, we do take a harm reduction approach where we want to just provide that education so that they're not making choices without the knowledge, but that they're making an informed choice.
And that sort of that approach applies to all incoming freshmen or transfer students. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. We actually have an online course that we require our incoming freshmen and our transfer students to complete. It's one of the many ways that we educate our students. But through this online course, it actually has three parts. They have to take one in August before they even come to campus. They have to take another follow-up in, like, December as they finish up their first semester on campus. And then another follow-up is actually due right now. It will be due when they get back from our Easter break. And so it's continually talking about alcohol, drugs, but also healthy relationships and sexual misconduct or even bystander intervention, how to help a friend. That's one of the most critical things that we try to educate our students about.
This online course, I suppose, that they're all required to take applies to kids who have been accepted at St. Joe's and are going to go to school there. Are you able to look at that and maybe see some red flags when you look at the results?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it collects some data for us anonymously, and so in an aggregate way, we can look at what our incoming class is looking like in terms of their drinking behaviors prior to entering school. And what we'll see, and we'll see this nationally too, this is, you know, we are not unique in that students are coming to campus already consuming alcohol in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can see that, and we are actually seeing nationally and here at St. Joe's that number is actually going down. A lot of people think that, you know, they might not think that, but it is actually over the last 5 or 6 years, the rates of students who are drinking often, you know, that they're making that a common reality for their lives in high school is going down. Students are drinking less and less. So we're having more abstainers coming into school, and we're having more students who are choosing sobriety at an earlier age before they even come into college.
Yeah. A couple of questions here. The first one is, are you confident that they are being honest with you?
That's always a question, of course. We do try to, you know, remind them throughout the whole course. They're never putting in, you know, identifying information. It's tracked separately. You know, we know that who completed it and who didn't because there's, you know, it's required.
Mm-hmm.
But the data is tracked separately to that. This whole course is ran through a company called EverFi Incorporated, and they're a national alcohol prevention company who does this for most college campuses do have some kind of course like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, you know, they should feel very confident that it is anonymous, it is confidential. We only see data in the aggregate form. But at the same time, I'm sure there are some students who think their parents might be looking over their shoulder as they're taking it.
Yeah.
And that might be true for some people.
Yeah, it might be. And the other thing, I suppose anyone listening who's got a child getting ready to apply to a college, that's a question that I think most parents wouldn't consider. You know, they go, well, what are the dorms like and what's the curriculum like? And parents should get ahead of the curve on what kind of effort is going on in this regard before they send their kid away, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, parents should be thinking about if a school is not talking openly about alcohol or drugs on their campus, then what are they hiding? You know, it's something that I think should be widely discussed. We talk with our parents at orientation for all of our incoming freshmen, so all of our incoming parents. We have an entire session with them where we actually share with them some of the aggregate data from this course from previous years. For some parents, they are very shocked and surprised to know that there's some students are drinking or smoking marijuana or having sex prior to coming to school. Or once they get here, but other parents are not shocked at all. So we do try to educate the parents as well as the students.
Katie Bean is our guest. Katie's with St. Joseph's University, where she is the Assistant Director of Student Outreach and Support for their WADE program, which is Wellness, Alcohol, and Drug Addiction. Katie, have you had the occasion when talking to incoming students or transfer students who have already been in treatment and are now in sobriety, do they identify themselves coming in, or do they generally keep that to themselves?
Absolutely. We recommend that they let us know coming in, because that means we can then provide them additional support. We hope that they're advocating for themselves and self-identifying in that way. So we do meet students, either transfer students or first years, and every year we're seeing more and more. You know, the need is growing to support this population of students in recovery. And let's see, last year at orientation, we asked a question through an anonymous, like, text polling survey when we had all the students together. And there were 11 students in our freshman class last year that identified themselves as in recovery.
You know, we're going to get into this in our second segment when we start talking about some of the preventive education methods. But I do want to sort of set it up by making this kind of observation. You tell me if I'm off the mark here now. I've mm-hmm. interviewed a lot of people in recovery, and, you know, it can be difficult. It's a full-time job, staying sober,
right,
no matter how old you are. But let's be real about this. The temptations and the minefield to negotiate, mm-hmm. to be negotiated, is much, much graver for young people. Is that true? I mean, that is generally true. They are more at risk, aren't they?
Certainly, certainly. And that's why, you know, we recognize that most college campuses are a recovery hostile environment for the most part. And that's why creating safe spaces for students in recovery and having additional support and extra resources is so crucial, because no one should have to choose between getting an education and their recovery.
Well, when we come back, we'll find out the other thing. I'm sure that young people wonder whether they have to give up having fun.
Right.
And get an education, because let's face it, one of the reasons you go to college is to have fun. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We are with Katie Bean. Katie is with St. Joe's University, where she is the assistant director of student outreach and support for a program called WADE, the WADE program, Wellness, Alcohol, and Drug Education. You send a kid to college these days, and you know, there's a whole menu of new problems that you might have to face. As we said in the first segment with Katie, lots of these kids and their parents have already dealt with the issues of substance abuse even before they got to college, such is mm-hmm. the size of the problem. But at places like St. Joe's and many other universities in our area and everywhere else, schools are taking a particular look at this stuff. So Katie, you know, we talked about what the WADE program is intended to do. Let's talk about how it pulls this off. Let's face it, you know this better than I. You're facing a pretty stiff headwind when you're trying to tell incoming students that certain things you got to be careful about. It might seem like you're saying that in order to get an education, you can't have any fun. So preventively, what goes on?
Sure, sure. And, you know, this is a tough gig, right? Talking to college students about safety and responsibility.
Or anything, for that matter. But, yeah, you
of
got...
Of course.
Yeah.
And so that's a tough gig, especially the older I get. And so, you know, when I was younger, right out of grad school, maybe there was that age connection a little more. But as I age and our students stay the same age, I think one of the techniques that we use, that a lot of campuses use, is peer education. And so we have groups of student leaders who are interested in these topics, who are personally affected or have some desire, some, you know, reason for wanting to educate their peers, and they go through our training. And they become basically ambassadors for our office, and they do a lot of the education themselves. And so when it's peer-to-peer, when a student is telling another student about their own experience, what they've learned from it, you know, a personal reason why they should be safe or help a friend or, you know, whatever that thing may be, then that really hits home a lot better than me as an older person. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. we utilize that peer education quite a bit when we work with our young people. And that's been proven to be pretty effective.
Yeah, well, yeah. But again, among the headwinds I'm talking about is the tendency of young people to categorize people. Look, we all choose our friends based upon a set of criteria, conscious mm-hmm. or otherwise. And for young people, you know, there are some sharp lines of definition. You know, do they party? Do they not party? Do they smoke marijuana? Do they mm-hmm. drink? And if they don't, back in the day anyway, they were cast as a certain kind of person. Like, oh, really? What's wrong with them? Is that changing among young people? I mean, do young people respect someone's sobriety is what I'm trying to say.
It is absolutely changing, you know, and it's so wonderful to see because not only are young people being like loud and proud with their recovery, you know, the anonymity is starting to fade with this next population of young people. So they're talking about it, they're open about it, and you know, young people are really inclusive and they support one another and respect each other's choices quite a bit, maybe more than we have in our own histories, in our own past when we were in college. And so, of course, yeah, some people are still, you know, they feel some type of way about being different and they feel like they have to fit in. And so for that reason, they feel like they might have to drink. But one of the things that we try to educate students about is the social norms, to let them know that our data and national data is showing more and more students are choosing not to drink for lots of different reasons, whether it's recovery or just, you know, being straight edge or whatever the reason. And so, you know, we really try to teach inclusivity, and most places do. And so, you know, respecting each other for the choices that they're making. And I do see that shifting in our culture on a college campus and just, you know, nationwide.
Well, your work will be complete once sobriety becomes cool.
Yes. That's what we're trying to make. We're trying to make it be seen as hip. And anytime I say that, I laugh, because even hip is not the right word.
No, it's not.
Hip is not hip anymore. So, yeah, I mean, we're trying to make it cool, be seen as a smart choice, as well as, you know, a positive choice that people make, and that, you know, that we want to entice people into making those healthy and positive choices. And we are a culture now that is leaning more towards health and wellness overall. You know, we're seeing our foods get healthier and our activities become healthier. And so utilizing that frame of health and wellness is really appealing to a lot of young people.
Well, when people think maybe the problem of maintaining sobriety on a college campus is insurmountable, we all ought to take a look at the experience of tobacco. I mean, it was inconceivable 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that you would have a smoke-free student body. But that's pretty that's pretty standard, and kids do define other kids by, you know, you don't smoke around here. Everybody knows that's not as acceptable as it used to be, and there's nothing to say that you can't modify this behavior with regard to drinking. Before we take another break here now, what other preventive measures are in place at St. Joe's to combat the really serious, the binge drinking? The Greek life and everything that comes to represent.
Sure. Yeah, so I mean, nationally there is a higher risk for certain populations. Freshmen is one of them, and we've talked about that in the different ways we're reaching our incoming class. But Greek life members is another one. Also athletics or club athletes could be another. And so anytime we have the ability to reach a population like that, we do. And so we utilize some social norms clarification, so talking to students about what the reality is. We do that in different ways. I have the distinct pleasure of meeting with every single Greek life chapter individually during their chapter meetings. I also meet with every athletic team. And we get to talk about these issues, you know, on a more personal level, like what is their specific team's culture? Because every team or every chapter is going to have a slightly different view based on their leadership or their history. And so we talk very personally about this, and we give students personalized feedback, and that's, I think, really helpful, too, that it's not just some generic model, that we're giving the same information to every group.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're here on Saturdays. We talk about the disease of addiction, and it's sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. I could spend a lot of time telling you about what happens at a place like Retreat. They have facilities in the Lancaster area, at West Palm Beach in Florida. They are expanding. Their reputation is, trust me, sterling. You can ask around. But every week I tell you this. I give you the phone number for Retreat. If they can help you, then they will help you. But they say, look, Steve, give the phone number out. We're here to answer questions about anything you have about the disease of addiction, about what's going on in your life or the treatment you're getting now, or what Retreat might be able to do for you. And I also tell you every week, I hope you never have to use this number. So here it is, 855-859-8808. That's 855-859-8808. Without an attempt to be overly alarmist here now, in my experience, no one ever sees this disease coming. So this is the kind of phone number that maybe you put someplace, and again, I hope you never have to use it, but people have to make extraordinary decisions under extraordinary pressures when the disease does occur. So this number could make a big difference. 855-859-8808, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Our guest today has been Katie Bean, and Katie's been talking to us about her work at St. Joe's University in mentoring, guiding, and helping young people make it through a healthy, sober, and safe couple of years at college. She is the Assistant Director of Student Outreach for their WADE program, W-A-D-E, Wellness, Alcohol, and Drug Education. So, Katie, let's talk about... You've laid out pretty clearly, you know, the philosophy of WADE, the efforts that the university does to, you know, make sure young people know what the situation is with regard to drinking and drugs during their college years. And then there's the reality of the situation. So what kind of resources do you bring to bear on this? And by that, I mean, are there sober dances? And how does that work? Tell me about all of that.
Sure. So, you know, for decades, we've had a lot of resources for students who choose not to partake in substances. And so there's a variety of things from a lot of different offices across campus. You know, the Student Leadership and Activities Department, they have a student union board, and they put on, like you said, dances, or they have events on campus. They even do trips off campus on the weekends, at night. So they have a lot of options for students. But over the last couple years, we've noticed a need for more recovery-specific events that students were seeing the need rise. And so we actually started, with the help of some students in recovery, a new student organization on campus called The Flock, because we're hawks, and everything has to do with the hawk around here. And so The Flock is a group of students who are either in recovery themselves from a substance use disorder, or their allies. And this organization puts on different events. They do social events together. You know, they're an organization that tries to raise awareness and also just provide social support to one another.
Tell me about some of these sober social events. I can imagine someone without a problem, drugs or alcohol, thinking, well, why in the world would I want to go to a party where there's no beer? I mean, are you seeing that prejudice break down?
I really am, you know, because we're doing things that young people and adults alike do all the time, just, you know, without alcohol. So we take our students to Phillies games. We go bowling. We go to the movies. They were really psyched when we went last year to the midnight premiere of the new Star Wars movie when it came out. So it's things that are normal, everyday, fun things to do. And we're preparing, you know, students to then be adults who are doing these same fun things, just, you know, without alcohol. And it could be, you know, trips to different schools or different locations in the area. We've taken students to conferences and educational things, but also to, you know, the fun stuff is really what they want to do, is they just want to get together and hang out. And, you know, one of the things that we've found one of the biggest needs is just a place on campus where they feel safe and comfortable being themselves. And don't we all want that? And so what I've kind of been surprised to learn is that our students in recovery felt like the library was not a safe place to get their homework done or to study. Simply because the library here on our campus, at least, is kind of a social place. People go, they work in groups, and, you know, they try to study. Maybe they're not doing that as much, but they're talking very openly about what they're doing tonight or what party they went to last night or, you know, what's up for the weekend. And so in that environment, trying to focus, if you're a person in recovery, you're hearing that, and that can be pretty triggering. So we created a Flock lounge that students have 24/7 access that they could swipe into. It's got a couch, a desk for if they do want to bring their laptop and get some work done, we've got the Keurig. Everybody needs the coffee there. And so it's just, you know, a place where they hang out, they do their homework, they take naps. It's a place where they can go throughout the day and just hang out and be together in a safe place. And that's really what students want more than anything, just a place to go.
Let me be the devil's advocate here now ask you, how would you respond to someone who went, yeah, but you're segregating these kids. You're giving them a safe place, and perhaps it's easy to isolate them in a campus environment, but they can't protect them in the real world. They're going to run into things. They're going to be subjected to people talking about their parties. How do you respond to that?
Sure. I would say that, you know, we're helping them transition to that. Wherever they were before us, perhaps a treatment center, perhaps inpatient, where they were very structured support. And here they're trying to have more independence. So they are living, you know, whether it's a residence hall or commuting from home or off campus, whatever their living situation is, they are interacting with people all the time, you know. So in their classes, walking to campus, in the dining hall, they're absolutely not secluded. So we're just giving them a space that they can go when they are feeling overwhelmed, when they are feeling like they need to take a breath. We have them, you know, utilize this Flock Lounge as a space, as a reprieve for themselves for a little bit.
Katie, how important is it to, or is it important at all, to let these young people know that sobriety doesn't mean always and forever being isolated, that maybe at some point in their college career they can actually go to a party where there's drinking? Or is that something to be avoided?
I think it's open for an individual to make that choice. I mean, there's definitely people who can do that and feel comfortable doing that even now in college, and there's some people who don't do that and choose not to and don't think that that's a safe place for them to be. Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing is that they can bounce ideas off of each other, and they can go together to an event. You know, creating friendships and feeling like you're not alone is like the number one thing that everybody wants.
Yeah.
And so when we have this organization and this space and they can go and make friendships and deep connections with people who are also understanding of their needs, and then they can together talk about it and decide, all right, let's go to this party tonight. And then they have each other. If it does get hard for one of them, you know, they can leave together.
Yeah. A wingman's always a good idea.
Absolutely.
So
The buddy system.
With regard to the resources for students in recovery, what's the situation vis-a-vis housing?
Sure. So housing is something that, you know, having a safe place to live is crucial. And it's something that we've been trying to come up with over the past couple years. You know, we hear from our students that that's something that they would be interested in. And so we've done a lot of research. We've spent our time developing different models of what we think would work here on our campus, and we've talked to other schools that have done it, and we are trying to pilot recovery housing starting here in the fall. So we're very excited about this. Right now we're kind of gauging our student interest and trying to see, you know, who wants to live there and how it's all going to work out. We're looking to have an older student be kind of helping hold everyone accountable, but we want it to be an independent place. You know, we don't want it to be too similar to, you know, it's not a treatment center. We're not a treatment center. Mm-hmm. That's not our role. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't want to be, we don't want to have that model. We really want to have an independent living space that is safe for students in recovery and free from substances.
So as you get that pilot program moving forward, what are you seeing at other schools? Is sober living facilities, sober housing on campus working at other places?
Absolutely. It's been working at places like Rutgers and Texas Tech for 20 and 30 years. You know, this isn't a new idea. It is growing because the need is growing, and more people at younger and younger ages are entering into recovery. And so it is growing. And even in New Jersey, there's actually a new bill this past year that went into effect for the fall coming up, that any college with a certain percentage of residential students has to provide some sort of recovery housing opportunity for their students. So you'll be seeing that in the Jersey schools popping up in the fall. And so we're taking our cue from what we know other schools are doing well, and we're trying to take those pieces and make it fit what would work here.
And we have another segment I want to get to. this final notion of kids helping kids, allies, you call them there. But before we leave this this area of students in recovery, what's the impact on the growing trend towards legalization of marijuana on campus?
Sure. I think, you know, for some students, they, they're seeing the decriminalization of marijuana in Philadelphia County as it's legal, and now we can all smoke, and that's just, you know, if people want to make that choice, that's definitely, we're seeing that.
What's the university's
position? It's on the rise.
What's the university's position?
The university has to follow federal guidelines. In order to receive any financial federal funding, including financial aid for students, work-study positions, and things like that, we have to follow federal guidelines.
Which means marijuana is illegal on the campus at St. Joe's University.
Absolutely.
All right. Katie Bean, our guest from St. Joe's, she's talking about their WAIT program and the efforts on that campus to make sure it's a safe environment for people who want to avoid the disease of addiction, or people who are trying, young people, trying to maintain sobriety and get an education at the same time. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Our guest on the telephone is Katie Bean. Katie is with St. Joe's University, right up there on Lancaster Avenue. Katie is the Assistant Director of Student Outreach and Support for their WADE, W-A-D-E program. The WADE program is a wellness, alcohol, and drug education program. And Katie's been filling us in on the sound unbelievably comprehensive efforts that a place like St. Joe's is doing to give kids the best chance they have while in college, at least at their school, to maintain their sobriety and maybe not fall into the trap of the disease of addiction. Katie, in this final segment, I at the beginning of this, we mentioned that the greatest ally we all have protecting young people from the disease of addiction is young people. I mean, it's great. We saw that recently in marches all over the country about school violence. You can see what happens when young people get behind an idea. It's a very powerful, powerful force. It can be. Well, tell me about what allyship is all about at St. Joe's. What does that mean?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm an ally myself. So I'm not a person in recovery, but, you know, I love and care about many people who are. And, you know, as an ally, you know, I feel like there's lots of things that we can do. You know, in any, you think about any social movement, it's always needed the majority population to really stand up and raise the voices of those who are marginalized. And that's often people in recovery. And so as an ally, I'm really trying to promote and create more allies on our campus. You know, that's actually one of the goals of that student organization I mentioned, the Flock. One of their goals for last year was to create more allies, create more compassionate and empathetic people who can understand the disease of addiction. And so we created an Allies of Recovery training on our campus. It's a certification program where, you know, we spend 2 hours, which I it was 4 hours when I first created it, and I could have done even more, but we cut it down to 2 hours, and we really talk about the definition of substance use disorder, the criteria of the disease, the, you know, warning signs to look out for in yourself or others, as well as the many, many pathways to recovery, the different treatment options. And then important language to understand, or, you know, strategies to be a supportive person. What does that mean? And so that certification program has been growing. We've been doing that for not just students, but also faculty and staff to really build the recovery IQ on our campus. Meaning we want to get everyone on our campus to understand and be ready for more students in recovery, to be really open and welcoming to that population.
Yeah, one of the, I mean, we know that the disease, particularly at this point in time, is well, people are well aware of it. But unfortunately, and for all the obvious reasons, people are aware of drug and alcohol abuse because of the overwhelming nature of the epidemic, particularly with opioids. What is less talked about or thought about is that there are millions of people in recovery.
Right. Our society just doesn't talk about the satisfying and productive lives that people are living in recovery. They only talk about the struggle and the downward spiral of someone with the disease. And you know, so we don't make it a positive option for people. We, as a society, we don't talk about recovery enough.
No, we don't talk about that it is possible. So I would suspect that at the center of this allyship is the notion that people can spread that message. So let me ask you a question about this. So in other words, if I'm on St. Joe's campus and I'm looking for an extracurricular activity, I can go take the recovery, Allies of Recovery training, get a kind of certification. That's the way that works?
Absolutely. It's open to anyone. We do different, like three or four open trainings throughout each semester that anyone can register for. At the same time, I'll go into different classes or department meetings. Just yesterday, I was with the campus ministry staff, and so their whole staff went through this training, as well as some student staff. And then, you know, I've gone into different classrooms and worked with different faculty around this. And so I'm really just trying to spread the word and get people you know, to be more understanding and empathetic.
Yeah.
That's the end goal, you know, so that people can be supportive of those in recovery in their language, in their words, but also in their actions.
And this is an extracurricular activity. This is not for college credits. Is that right?
No, it's not for credit, although that would be wonderful to get there time. Perhaps that's a goal.
Well, you know what? That's you know, we're not saying 10 credits, but a couple of credits would be a good idea. And certainly worthwhile. So are people responding to this? I mean, people who want to, are there lots of people you're hearing from who want to get involved in helping other people?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the role of allies that allies have played in many other different populations as well, that's a role people are comfortable identifying. You know, we've had some students go through the training as an ally, and then they've opened up and said, actually, I'm in recovery. You know, they want to make sure people aren't, as you probably know too, there's still some anonymity around being in recovery because of the stigma of our society.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is still, you know, there are some stereotypes around who the people are who have this disease. And so, you know, if we can build up this recovery IQ, make people understand and be empathetic, build this allyship, then more and more people will be able to be open about who they are, about what they've been through, and that will empower even more people, you know, to be open about it. And so I think, you know, we always joke around, you know, that there's people in recovery that, like, they live among us, right? They're everywhere.
Right.
I know tons of faculty members, staff, here on our campus who are in recovery who aren't open about it. You know, I know, but they're not, you know, open about it. And I think if we can build up this recovery IQ, we can get people to a place where they can actually be open about their experiences.
I agree with you. And I think, and I know you agree, that when the stigma and the hidden nature, the anonymity of this disease begins to evaporate even more, that process will begin among young people. So
right.
the WADE program is a great, great effort in that regard. People want information, they just go to the St. Joe's website and take a look?
Yep, sju.edu/WADE, and they'll find all kinds of resources there, not only for recovery, but on all the things that we offer.
Right. Katie Bean, thanks so much for joining us on Recovery Radio. You were great. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. You guys enjoy the rest of your weekend and look for us on Saturdays, Recovery Radio. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.